This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A new sitcom called Little Mosque on the Prairie premiered last week in Canada on CBC television and was a big hit. The show follows a group of Muslims in a small Canadian town called Mercy who have rented space in an Anglican church for their mosque. The comedy surrounds the constant misunderstandings that town residents have about Muslims in the mosque, but there's plenty of comic misunderstandings between the Muslims, too, because of generational differences and the differences between Arab, Black African, and white members of the mosque. My guest is the creator of the show, Zarqa Nawaz. It's loosely based on her experiences when she moved from Toronto to Regina in Saskatchewan. Nawaz also directed a documentary called Me and the Mosque about women who objected to newly created partitions in their mosques, dividing women from men. In the opening episode of Little Mosque on the Prairie, a new young imam from Toronto is coming to replace the mosque's more old-school imam, who was originally from Pakistan. The young imam is online at the airport, talking on his cell phone to his mother. A woman standing next to him overhears his end of the conversation. Misinterpreting what he's saying and suspecting he's a terrorist, she reports him to the authorities. Here's the scene.
Mom, stop it with the guilt. No, don't put Dad on. I've been planning this for months. It's not like I dropped a bomb on him. No, if Dad thinks it's suicide, so be it. This is Allah's plan for me.
Oh, my.
I'm not throwing my life away. I'm moving to the prairies. To run a mosque?
Step away from the bag. You're not going to paradise today.
Excuse me, what is going on? You must have the wrong person. What? Those are my back.
That's a scene from the new Canadian sitcom, Little Mosque on the Prairie. Zarqa Nawaz, was that scene controversial?
You know, when we wrote it, we didn't think it was going to be controversial. And for the most part, it hasn't been. But I have gotten some feedback from some reporters who felt that, you know, was it too sensitive of an issue to make a joke of? And I thought, you know, it was really interesting to me because I thought, you know, I had to be really careful when it came to Muslim issues, not offending sensibilities. But there are sensibilities even around 9/11 that one has to sort of respect and to take into consideration. So I did find that interesting that I got a few phone calls where people wanted to know, you know, did I think I had crossed a line by making fun of, you know, being a potential terrorist in an airport and getting arrested? So, yeah, it was really interesting to me when I took those calls.
Was part of the problem, as it was perceived, that you were taking too lightly security concerns?
What had happened at 9/11 was a very serious thing for the Americans, and that things that happened in the airport are not things to be trifled with or to make jokes about. You know, it was almost like talking to Muslims about, you know, a Muslim joke in this series when I listened to, you know, to some people, and I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's interesting to me. I never realized that that there would be some sensitivities around those issues too. So, you know, to me, you have to be careful, you know, not to offend both groups.
Well, let's take a subsequent scene after he is detained at the airport because somebody thinks that he might be a terrorist. He's interrogated in a room at the airport. Let me play that scene.
What's the charge? Flying while Muslim?
No, that's not the charge.
I was joking. Muslims around the world are known for their sense of humor.
I did not know that.
That was another joke.
Oh, what is that? Some kind of signal?
No, that's because you didn't get the...
You lived for over a year in Afghanistan.
I was volunteering with a development agency.
Why did you leave your father's law firm?
While I was in Egypt doing my Islamic studies, I found my true calling.
Explosives?
Yeah, explosives. Look, I am going to the town of Mercy to work as an imam. You know, like a priest? Hold on, I can prove it. I have the ad that I answered for the job. You can call the mosque if you like. If the story doesn't check out, you can deport me to Syria.
Hey, you do not get to choose which country we deport you to.
It's a scene from Little Mosque on the Prairie, and as we could hear, both the people doing the interrogating and the imam who's being interrogated are completely misunderstanding each other every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of response did you get to that scene?
Well, Well, it's interesting. That scene was actually inspired by the Maher Arar case in Canada. I don't know if you know about that case, but a Canadian citizen who was on his way back home, he had been away on vacation and he had to travel through New York to come back home, was arrested by American authorities and, in collusion with the Canadian authorities, was deported to Syria, where he was imprisoned and tortured for 1 year. And, you know, this man was completely innocent. And eventually he was exonerated, you know, he was returned back to Canada because of the efforts of his wife. And, you know, it was a huge, huge issue in Canada. How could we have allowed this to happen to one of our own, that we would, you know, have allowed these sort of stereotypes to cloud our judgment, that we would have sent a man that was innocent of these charges to, you know, to a country, you know, to be tortured. And so to me, you know, that was saying something that I felt I had to comment about. And so I wrote, you know, we wrote this scene together, myself and the writers, about, you know, being interrogated, you know, by a Canadian police officer. And, you know, and some people felt that maybe, you know, that scene, you know, took the issue too far. But, you know, I mean, there were different responses. You know, some people thought it was absolutely hilarious and loved it because it made the point absolutely as it should have. You know, and other people felt that, you know, did I go too far with that scene? So it was interesting to me how people responded, because it was a very, you know, politically sensitive scene, because, you know, you're actually talking about something that had happened to someone and it affected someone's life. And, you know, to me, that's the only way for me to deal with it, is through a comedic take on it, so that people can understand how serious it was for one person.
Now, in the second episode of Little Mosque on the Prairie, which I have not yet seen, the older imam, who's from Pakistan, wants to erect a barrier in the mosque to separate the women from the men.
Right.
Now, you actually made a documentary called Me in the Mosque about how more and more mosques in Canada have been erecting partitions between the men and the women, and that even happened in your mosque. Would you describe the change in your mosque and how that affected your experience of praying there?
Well, when I first came to Regina, women prayed behind the men, and there was no issue about that. You know, nobody even questioned it. But as our community started to grow, and we started getting more conservative immigrants coming to our community, there, you know, people started talking about how this wasn't really Islamic, it wasn't really appropriate, women shouldn't really be seen by the men. And it's, you know, at first I was like, okay, you know, we can fight this. This isn't really going to really affect us in any way, except that the voices started getting louder and louder. And at one point, I think we had a visiting imam from Saudi Arabia, you know, which is a very conservative country from an Islamic point of view, come down and say publicly that what we were doing was wrong. And this sort of emboldened the more conservative members of our community. And one day, you know, I came to the mosque and there's this shower-like curtain hanging where the women are praying, and we're expected to pray behind it. And that's when the problem started. You know, some of the women wanted to show that we weren't going to accept this decision, and so we prayed in front of it to show that it was unacceptable to us. You know, and I admit that there were some women who preferred it and wanted a more private space, so they prayed behind it. But I felt that, you know, it wasn't fair that it was a unilateral decision where everyone had to pray behind it, and that there should be some accommodation for women who wanted to pray, you know, in front of it without a barrier between them and the khatib, the leader of the prayer.
What kind of explanation did your imam give you about why there was suddenly a barrier between the men and the women?
The explanation is always like, well, it's just a more Islamic thing. You know, women don't dress properly anymore. Men are more distracted. We're in the West. Things are more loose and laxed, and we've got to tighten things up. And, you know, because they can't really defend it from theology, because, you know, there was never a barrier during the time of the Prophet. You know, men and women interacted freely with each other. There was a much more normal behavior. Like, I read stories of the time of the Prophet, and women, you know, used to speak up, used to ask men questions, used to ask, you know, they couldn't hear the Prophet, they'd ask the men to repeat it, they would challenge each other. But there was this normalcy between them. You know, they still preserved their modesty, but there was more of an interaction between them, which I feel has disappeared now from many aspects of the Muslim culture.
Now, let's talk about the casting. Did you want all the actors who play Muslims to be Muslims? Did you care?
No, I didn't care. I wanted the best actors we can find in the country, because ultimately that's best for the show. You know, because there's no point in getting Muslim actors and then having really bad acting and nobody watching it, and then your ratings go down the tubes and then you're canceled. So it's best for me and the show that we got the best actors we could possibly get. And, you know, if they happen to be Muslim, that was great. I mean, unfortunately, you know, acting is not a career that most Muslims go into because of, you know, some of the limitations that would have to happen. You know, a lot of Muslim, if a Muslim woman, you know, wore a headscarf, she wouldn't be willing to take it off. Or, you know, if a man was quite devout, he wouldn't, you know, want to be touching members of the opposite sex or having sex scenes. So, you know, it becomes very difficult for a lot of Muslim actors to go into the entertainment business. So we were lucky that the best actor that we chose to play Ammar Rashid, the new imam, turned out to be Muslim in real life. And, you know, with a good solid base of religious knowledge and the ability to recite Arabic, which was a huge advantage to us.
This is, from what I've read, this is like the first Muslim sitcom in North America.
Yeah, as far as I know.
Are you the only Muslim on the writing staff?
I am. We don't have, like I mentioned before, Muslims going into the entertainment field, they're very few and far in between. So I don't think we really have any or maybe extremely few Muslim writers in Canada. And because we are Canadian and we protect our cultural product, we have certain rules, which means we don't use writers from other countries. Like in the U.S., there's no rules like that. You know, you don't have to protect your cultural product because you have global dominance.
We're king.
You are. We compete against
you. We rule the world
in
pop culture.
You absolutely do. And the only way to protect, you know, I mean, if we didn't have those rules, I think everyone would like automatically cast Brad Pitt in every film they could if they're going to get Canadian funding. So our rules are we use, you know, Canadian actors, Canadian writing teams to keep the cultural product Canadian. And so what that does, you know, also means that it's difficult to find Muslim writers. But in a way, I think that it's an advantage to us because bringing in other writers from different faith communities opens up the writing and makes sure that it's not insular, that people can't relate to the subject matter. That, you know, we do tell stories that have to do with Muslim communities, but it's not written in such a way that you would have to belong to that community to understand. Because, you know, ultimately this show is going to be seen by the non-Muslim community in order for it to survive and get the ratings to carry on. So we have to make it as universal and accessible as possible.
Now, I know you wear a headscarf, and I'm wondering if you think that that is a sign of the inequality of women.
I don't think so. I mean, to me, it's the choice of a woman to decide how she wants to wear, what she wants to wear, and her level of modesty. And to me, I prefer a certain level of modesty. And I think, you know, if you look at the society, you'll have people like Britney Spears or Paris Hilton. And if they just, you know, if they choose not to wear an underwear and flash people when they get into cars, I mean, that's acceptable in the society. So if that's acceptable, then if a woman wants to cover her hair because she believes in, you know, in a higher degree of modesty, then that should be acceptable too. To me, the problem comes in when it's men, when men decide that this is how you're going to dress and you have no choice and we will force you to dress this way. That's the point where I think it starts to become problematic. Because I think, you know, you can sexualize a woman in two ways. One is to take, objectify a woman sexually in two ways. One is to take off her clothes completely, and one is to completely enshroud her in, you know, in a veil that's like you head to foot where you can't see anything. I think those are two extreme ends of the same thing, ultimately. And I feel like the middle is where I want to be, where it's just, you know, where you're comfortable dressing modestly. You know, I think it's a woman's right to decide if she wants to wear the headscarf. I know that there are Muslims who believe it's mandatory, and that's fine, but I don't think it's right to impose that upon a woman.
How old were you when you started wearing the hijab?
I was 13. I was starting high school.
And was it your idea to wear it or your mother?
Yeah, very much my idea. My mom didn't wear it. I just felt more connected to my faith by wearing it. And I just felt a stronger sense of, I got a stronger sense of identity as a Muslim woman wearing it. And I just, you know, it just made me feel better about who I was as a Muslim because people recognized me. People knew where I was coming from, what I had to say, what my beliefs were. And I've always felt very empowered by it.
Do you have any daughters?
I have two daughters and two sons, so equal.
Do your daughters wear the headscarf?
No, I want them to decide later in their lives. They're only 10 and 12, and I feel that that's a decision that they have to make when they're older. I want them to sort of, you know, enjoy themselves as, you know, young women growing up. And these are, and I don't, you know, to me, modesty goes beyond just the headscarf. I think for me, I'm more concerned with sort of neck down. I'd rather, you know, they learn to dress modestly as women because, you know, I think both men and women need to dress modestly, just, you know, just as themselves. And I would, the same rules I have for my daughters, I will have for my sons. And if they choose to wear the headscarf, that will be up to them. But I'd rather they wait until they're much older.
Since you wear a headscarf, where do you find beautiful ones to wear?
It's a good question because living in Regina, it's a huge challenge finding really good headscarves. So I make sure that when I'm in Toronto, I scour the Islamic stores to find the, you know, the most beautiful ones I can find. And then I try to go to the biggest Islamic convention in North America, which is the Islamic Society of North America in Chicago at Labor Day weekend. So I go there every year, and I do a giant shopping trip where I get as many scarves as I can possibly cram into my suitcase, and customs will let me come across without finding me. Because there's a limit, you know. Uh-huh. And I wish they would change that limit.
Now, I want to play something from early in Little Mosque on the Prairie, in which the older imam, the imam who's from Pakistan, is preaching at the mosque.
As Muslims, we must realize the enemy is not only out there. The enemy is much closer than you think. The enemy is in your kitchen.
Maybe while the enemy's in there, he could do the dishes.
May have a point.
Dad, Bobber never has a point.
My point is this. Wine gums, rye bread, liquor-ish. Western traps designed to seduce Muslims to drink alcohol.
His sermons are going to drive me to drink alcohol.
Patience, daughter. Even it's worse. His last sermon. The new mom will be on his way very soon.
American Idol. Canadian Idol. I say all idols must be smashed. Desperate housewives. Why should they be desperate when they're only performing their natural womanly duties?
It's a scene from Little Mosque on the Prairie, and my guest is the creator of the show, Zarkar Nawaz. Have you ever been in a mosque with an imam who so completely misunderstood popular culture?
Well, it was a bit of an exaggeration, but yes, when I, you know, was growing up in a mosque, I did have an Islamic teacher who told us, you know, we shouldn't be drinking root beer and, you know, hamburgers, and that the, you know, these words were a little bit, embedded in the culture, and I remember, you know, for years as a kid growing up in Canada, I wasn't allowed to drink root beer because my parents were genuinely confused by what it really was. So, you know, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but there's a grain of truth to it too, because it was inspired by my Islamic school teacher when I was a teenager. So I'm really hoping he's not recognizing.
Well, you just gave it away.
Yeah. I'm hoping that he's retired and, you know, peacefully in the Barbados or something.
So did the kids laugh at him when he got it wrong like that?
At the time when I was growing up?
Yeah.
No, we took him quite seriously. Like, I mean, he was, you know, he was sort of, you know, we were much younger and he, you know, he was much older and he was saying, you know, things like hamburgers and, you know.
He thought hamburgers were made out of ham.
Well, yeah, he was like, you really have to be careful and look at the words and, you know, what are the, you know, what, why, you know, why are these words there? And he was sort of warning us to be more careful about the ingredients and, you know, what the meaning of these words were, and were they sort of softening us to accept alcohol? And so, you know, I mean, I'm sure he meant well. I really do. But I think it was a great inspiration for that scene. And I think people in my community are a bit more careful when they talk to me now.
Oh, yeah. Well, is that happening, that people are afraid to see you around because they think they're going to end up on the show?
Yeah. I think people are sort of being a bit more careful because they're realizing that it's all good material for me.
But you do have a lifetime to draw on.
I do. And God knows there's enough stuff in the news that you can just continue to draw on stuff that happens in the headlines constantly about Muslims. And so, you know, it's great for me in terms of material. I seem to have no end of it.
Does anybody think that you're a traitor because, among other things, you're showing comic divisions within the Islamic community? You're not just showing, like, people from the outside who distrust Muslims and Muslims who are skeptical of the outside world. There's a lot of divisions within the community that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that I think overall, because I'm an organic part of the community that I'm representing, there's not that fear, because I still go back to the mosque. The mosque is very much a part of my current life. I have accountability to my people. Like, I'm not writing from someone far away who doesn't have to deal with the Muslim community. There's a lot of accountability for myself. I mean, I deal, you know, with my community on a daily basis. I can understand some people's fears, because there have been a lot of Muslims who, you know, quote unquote, have sold out their community to be able to sell a book or, you know, get ahead in their career by, you know, bringing out divisions or making Muslims very angry and saying, see, this is how they react, this is the way they are. Whereas in my community, I think there is a sense that, you know, that's not what I'm out to do. I'm not out to further my career by selling out my community. What I'm trying to do is bring a better understanding between two communities that really, really need a chance to look at each other and laugh at each other and, you know, bridge the gaps of paranoia that exists right now. And that, you know, for every, you know, kooky Muslim I have in my show, I have an equally kooky non-Muslim. So sort of an equal opportunity show for all people.
If you're sitcom gets picked up by an American broadcaster cable network, are there changes you think you'd have to make because there are some references that are so Canadian that Americans wouldn't get them?
Yeah, I mean, even when we're shooting it, we're doing alternatives to certain takes.
Oh.
So that if it does get picked up by an American broadcaster, there won't be that many changes. So we're conscious of that, which is why we haven't actually referenced where we are in the prairies. We just generally say we are in a town of Mercy in the prairies. We don't actually reference the province of Saskatchewan. Because, you know, it could be in North Dakota easily.
Uh-huh,
as
I
well
see.
As so we don't actually say it's Saskatchewan. We're very clever that way. Sales are important.
Absolutely. Well, good luck and thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Zarka Nawaz created the Canadian sitcom Little Mosque on the Prairie. It premiered last week on the CBC.